I will, yeah, it's actually going to be showing up there too. So, oh, so do I, should I just connect
yeah,
it to
maybe
this?
You should, I don't know.
That might be a better idea. Okay. Let me just do that.
Then you don't stand
here. No, that's fine. I basically approximately can figure out. And I'll just have it this way for myself. So. Okay. Is this?
Can you see it? Are you able to use it?
Not yet.
No.
Oh. No,
oh,
it's going. Okay,
okay.
I think it's going, yeah. Leave it, leave it. Yep.
Okay.
It's working.
Okay.
Good.
So, this way then?
Well, I guess
yeah,
it's out of the way. Finally.
There you go. Okay. So, apparently somebody is going to come and, you know, try to see what they can do, but we'll try as far as we can. My agenda today is to actually just complete the discussion on belief space planning, and which we started talking about with the representation for the belief states. So by the way, I don't know how many of you have looked at this news today. So I thought, gay code breaker, who else can it be? And it's Alan Turing, of course. You know, I assume most of you know the story, at least. They put it up on the web. I think they should just make an apology in the parliament. That's what they should do, really. But anyway, what I'm going to do is basically consider that particular problem. I don't know whether any of you can see it. It's initial state and a goal. Initial state M is true, and exactly one of P, Q, R are true. Only one of them are true, okay? And then the actions are shown next there. One action basically says precondition M, and if P is true, oh, he's trying to do that. If P is true, then K is true. You could
have a big problem going down to
210. 210? Well, we could, I guess.
It's going to take me 10 to 15 minutes to pick
a ball. Are you guys, I mean, this is okay? Okay, then we'll just leave with this, I guess. Okay, thank you.
I'll fix it first thing Monday morning.
Okay. Apparently, we've got a show with you. So, how many of you know Herbert Simon? Herbert Simon is actually the only Nobel Prize winning computer scientist. How did Herbert Simon win Nobel Prize in computer science? I mean, he's a computer scientist. He won Nobel Prize. He did not win it for computer science. He's an economist. He was in economics, and he also was in CMU Computer Science Department. And I had this story that one of my friends, he had Herbert Simon on his, Craig Knobloch had Herbert Simon on his committee. And you know, Simon, of course, started when people would formulate their entire thoughts in their head, and they just start talking. You know, I mean, it's like, how many of you have seen Lincoln Gettysburg Address in PowerPoint? You should see it, okay? Go and see it. You know, just look for Gettysburg Address in PowerPoint, and it's just a beautiful thing. Basically, Lincoln didn't have PowerPoint, and still was able to give this Gettysburg Address, which, you know, we still remember. And, you know, Simon was also of this kind of a older time generation. He was thinking, you know, you don't need these slides and so on. They're just kind of crutches. So apparently when Craig was about to do his dissertation, as soon as he started, the bulb went off. I mean, it was not even these kinds of bulbs. It was a bulb in one of those. You know, how many of you remember the foil-based slide projectors? So the foil-based slide projector went off, and so he had all his nice foils, and he was ready to go for his defense, and they tried taking care of it, it didn't work. They got one more in, that also blew. At which point, apparently, Simon just told Craig, continue. Just, you know, slides are only a crutch. And so the story that I hear Craig saying is, I want my crutch. You know, I really can't live without my crutch. So we'll see how far we can go without the crutch today, I guess. Anyway, so you have one of the interesting questions here is, why are actions written this way? A1 precondition is M, and the effect basically is saying if P is true, then K is true. Okay, so again, I'm assuming that all of you know classical planning from propositional representations, and this is a conditional effect. This is a conditional effect. So this action won't take place unless in the state before it, M is true. Okay, and when it does take place, then if P also is true in the state before, then K will hold. Okay. Now, these kinds of actions basically, remember when we started talking about belief space planning, I pointed out that there is this problem in conformant planning, in belief space planning, that if an action, you know, if you have a big belief space, belief state, and an action is applicable in most of the states but not the last one, is it applicable or not? Can you use it or not? Obviously, if you have applicability conditions, then when you happen to apply it in S10, the result is undefined, which is basically sort of the end of the world. And so you would not be able to use actions at all in those cases. So, and then at that point I said we might want to assume that actions are always applicable in every state, and that they will just have effects if in fact certain conditions are satisfied. So if you remember that discussion, then this action, is it that kind of an action?
Yes.
No. It has, yes, it has a conditional effect, but it also has a precondition. Okay, if you wanted to convert this into a purely conditional effect action, then you need to write this as A1, and if M and P are true, then K is true. Do you understand what I'm saying? So then basically, if M and P are not true in the initial state, in the previous state, then A1 just leaves the state alone. In this particular case, if M is not true, the next state is not even defined. Okay, so that's some connection to what we discussed previously. So anyway, in this case, even though I said it would be useful to think of actions as having only conditional effects and no preconditions at all, you know, in these examples, I'm using preconditions. You know, there's nothing illegal. It's just useful to have it this way, because then every action is applicable everywhere. Okay. So there are a bunch of effects there, and then there is initial state which says if M is true, and M is true, and exactly one of P, Q, and R are true, and then the initial state can then be changed into a logical formula. It can be written in a logical formula. There are two versions that are shown there. One is DNF, which basically is that AND form. So things are ANDed. Each clause is a conjunction of literals, and you have a disjunction of conjunction of literals. Okay, and the CNF is the other one, right? Okay, so having done that, so that's basically, you know, we're just looking at an actual example in this particular case. Now, how do you do planning for this? Okay, so one thing that is, I think I mentioned it last time too, is DNF almost looks like as if they are partial state descriptions. Okay, CNF almost looks like they are partial goal descriptions. So it's not surprising that if you read Dan's paper, he was using DNF representations for doing progression and CNF representations for doing regression. Having said that, I'll also point out that as we go along today, by the time we come to conditional planning, we'll realize that regression has its own problems. You know, it sort of becomes tricky as to what it means to regress over sensing action. Okay, which, you know, to kind of foreshadow what's going to happen, if you remember, if you have a belief state S1, S2, S3, right, and then you have an observation action, which will say yes if S1 is true, otherwise it says no, right? Then you would be able to just split this into S1 here, yes is S1, and no is S2, S3. This is what we did in the atomic representation. Okay, so while you're going this way, it gets split. You know, a single state becomes split into multiple belief states. Okay. Now, if you're doing regression, then in essence, you have to do the reverse operation. You have to take multiple belief states and regress them over a sensing action to make a single belief state, which brings some interesting search issues. We'll talk about that. Okay. So while in the beginning I'll act as if anything, any kind of planning can be done, progression and regression, as well as plan space planning, which we didn't discuss at all here, but some of you probably know from 471. But mostly progression, if you understand that, at least that would be good enough. Okay. Okay, so progression and regression. Progression you think in terms of DNF, regression you think in terms of CNF. Okay, that's the picture for progression. Okay, so the important thing essentially is, again, to show how to do search, I'll only show one path. Starting from the initial state, I'll show you a sequence of actions which will lead you to a belief state which satisfies the goal. Okay, in particular, the goal test, when do you know that you have reached the goal? When do you know that you have reached the goal? If you have a belief state, which is represented as a logical formula, okay. Now notice that that picture there, by the way, it sort of don't give too much of a literal meaning. You know, it looks as if there is one state on the top, then the next state, and the next state. It's really what you have is a logical formula, which is a conjunction of three things, disjoined with another conjunction of three things, disjoined with another conjunction of three things. It's just a logical formula. Okay, goal itself is a logical formula. And the termination condition is the current state logical formula entails the goal state. That's it. If it entails, you're done. If not, you're not done. Okay. Now, if everything is in the DNF form, if everything is in the DNF form, then what you can argue, you can basically say that if every one of the constituents, the DNF constituents, satisfy the goal, then the entire state satisfies the goal, right? Because that also semantically makes sense. So basically, each of these constituents correspond to a subset of belief states. Okay, and every belief state satisfies the goal state, then you're done. Okay, now of course, goal state itself is a tricky point to talk about. It doesn't have to be a single state. Goal state itself can be a belief state. If every one of these constituents winds up entailing at least one of the belief states, then you're done. Okay. So what we do in this particular case is I'm just showing you one branch. I did A3. You know, can A3 be done? Well, A3 can be done if the previous state entails M. It does entail M because you can see that there are conjunctions, multiple conjunctions disjoint. All of them have M true, so M is true. Okay. Now, if that is the case, then wherever R is true, you would wind up adding L. That's what you're doing. Okay, because A3 is saying if R is true, then L will be true. Okay, so on the top, in the bottom one is the only one actually. The bottom is the last one there is the only constituent which has an R. Okay, so for that you put an L next to it. Okay, I mean I'm talking in syntactic terms, but basically you can make sense of it just as logical operation. Okay, and then so you get a new belief state which is also in a DNF form. That's the advantage. If the actions have this simple, you know, conjunction of conditional effects, then if you apply an action to a DNF state, you get a DNF state back. Okay? And then, so then I applied A5, which says if L is true, then G would be true. Okay? And so this basically the last constituent, which has now L, now has G also true. By this time, I have at least made sure that one of the constituents is consistent with G. I'm not done yet. Right now, this still does not entail G. Only one of the constituents entails G. If I do more actions, I will eventually get to a point where all constituents entail G. You can actually look at the example and see what actions should be done to complete you should be able to see what action should be done until everybody has G true. Okay, so that's the progression part. So, and it almost looks like normal progression. The only difference is you're thinking in terms of disjunction of constituents. Each constituent sort of acts like a previous state in the classical planning terms. Okay. Now for the regression, you could think of regression too. You can do the regression too. And for the regression, the idea is you start from the goal state. Start from the goal state. Regression almost does not change at all in this case. The only point is you do not get to, since you cannot observe the state, since you cannot observe the state, so for example, if I regress G over A4, okay, and it says on the side that A4 will give you goal K, goal G, if K is true. Right? In classical planning, you would just say, well, since I know I'm starting from the goal state, G is already true, so all I need to have true before this action is K. Right? That's what you would do. That's how regression is defined in classical planning. In this case, you don't know when you have reached the goal state. Even when you have reached the goal state, you should, I mean, you, there is no way you can observe and say you are in the goal state. So basically what you would have to do is you have to put the weaker formula. So if you do A4, then before A4, if either G or K is true, then after A4, for sure G would be true. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay, and then you do this. So this is how, so you wind up having extra disjunction now because you are not sure which, what part of the state, I mean, you don't know exactly what is true in the state you are currently in. That's the only change you need to do to get the regression going. Okay, so then you do, so you do A4, you got G or K. So in essence, I would say that trying to prove that goal is true is being made into a weaker condition. To prove G is true, either prove that G is true or K is true in the current state. And then to prove K is true, so if you do A5 on top of it, then it says either prove G is true or K is true or L is true. The idea, of course, is at some point of time, this disjunction, this is not a conjunction, this is a disjunction. It can become weak enough that the disjunction is already true in the initial state. In this particular case, what happens is, I guess I went all the way there. At the end, after A3, after you regress over A3 in this branch, you have a large disjunction. Part of that disjunction is P, R, Q, R, R. And P, R, Q, R, R is part of the initial state. Right? Because I said initial state, either one of them is certainly true. So P, R, Q, R, R is true. Because of which, now this particular last formula is entailed by the initial state, right? So you realize this, right? A entails ARB, not the opposite, right? A does entail ARB, okay? So PRQRR entails a bigger disjunction that contains PRQRR and more stuff. So it looks as if when you're doing this regression, you're just making the formula more complex. It looks as if you are in trying to make a goal G1 true, you're saying not only achieve G1, but also achieve K. That's not what you're saying. If you did say that, you should cut the search at that point of time. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you're ever trying to search for a goal, and you sub-goal on a situation which involves not only satisfying that goal, but another goal, then you are not making any progress. But if instead of saying and, if I said R, then I am making progress. Okay, so that's basically, again, this is all described in the paper that you read, and all that you change in the regression right now is you introduce the disjunction. You can't be sure what the state is because you don't have the observability. Okay, and you know, and any time the regressed state is entailed by the initial state formula. Now notice that this one I did it in the Clausel CNF formulation instead of the DNF formulation. Again, it's not really important whether you, if you're thinking completely in terms of in terms of the logical formulas, it doesn't really matter whether they are in a particular canonical form or not. I only put that this way because they look much more similar to the progression and regression that you already know. Actually, belief space planners don't use, most of them don't use either DNF or CNF. They instead use BDDs because they are much simpler to manipulate. Okay, why would you use BDDs? One of the reasons you will wind up having to use BDDs is because you would like to be able to search for, you know, notice that you're going back to the same state, state looping. Okay, in this particular case, belief state looping. And to do that, you need to check equivalence of formulas. And equivalence of formulas is easier to do in BDDs. That's one main reason. There is another reason which we will also talk about, which is that, in fact, if you, when you do things in BDD formulation, every piece of the planning, you know, the progression operation or the regression operation, they all just become BDD operations. Okay, and that's what you read in that appendix. You know, everything is a logical formula, and a progression as well as a regression operation, I mean, imaging operation or a pre-imaging operation themselves are specific BDD operations. But as far as the semantics are concerned, if you understand how the progression and regression is working, I think it's a useful thing. Okay, so that's progression, that's regression. Now, before I go on to the BDDs, which, you know, I'll do it a little later, I also want to talk about sensing in planning. You know, again, we did all of these discussions in the atomic states. We're redoing them in the in the factored states. Okay. Here we talk about logical formulas in particular. Okay, so in the case of sensing, the things that we are talking about is, so a very specific issue from the point of view of factored representation is, what is the sensing action doing? It essentially, a sensing action can be seen as something A sensing action can be seen as evaluating the truth of an arbitrary logical formula. Okay? Normally, that's the most general way of thinking of a sensing action. Okay? A simple subcase of it is if p is a single state variable. That's an easy case. That means I have P1, P2, etc., V1, V2, etc., up to Vm as my variables, and a sensing action, each sensing action that I have observes a specific state variable. Okay, but normally it's not required that a word that you have has sensing actions for exactly individual fluents. Do you understand what I'm saying? Oftentimes a sensing action gives truth of a complex formula. So for example, you know this in medicine, right? If you do a test on a patient, right, the test will come yes if either they have this particular disease or they have this other syndrome which has been treated with this particular kind of drug. Do you understand what I'm saying? So all the sensing action is telling you is either this guy has this disease, so for example, you know, maybe let's say a particular disease causes your tongue to become blue. Let's say, so you sense the tongue color. What you are really sensing by that, in essence, is whether you have the disease or whether you just had a blue ice cream. Okay, so in general, normally sensing actions, arbitrary formulas. If you want to handle those, that's a harder sensing problem. Okay, so not surprisingly, the easier case is what we'll focus on first, which are probably right now, in fact, in today's class, we'll only talk about the easier case, which is assume that each sensing action senses a particular variable. Okay, So that's one issue about sensing actions. And then obviously you should know that this is easier to handle than the more general case. The second tricky issue about sensing actions is, do sensing actions have preconditions? Okay? Do sensing actions have preconditions? And also, whether they have only sensing effects or do they have both causative and sensing effects? And once again, in general, sensing actions can have preconditions. Right? For example, I can't take an X-ray unless I get you, wheel you into a room which has an X-ray machine. So that's a precondition. You need to be there, you know, to be able to take the X-ray. Okay? And furthermore, X-rays not only sense what's going on, but also cause cancer. You know, I mean, if you do a huge number of them, you know, you can nicely get cancer. Right? So everything actually has both causative effects and, you know, observational effects. So the pure sensing, we will first assume that the simpler case is pure sensing actions, which have no preconditions, and as an effect, just tell you the state of a single variable. Okay, if you understand that, then you still are not completely done. In fact, you need to start thinking about what happens if you have a sensing action with preconditions, as well as a sensing action which only senses complex formulas. Okay. So these are the ones that we'll look at right now. Okay. The other point to, so this is basically, this thing is saying the same thing. The observability, this slide is essentially saying you can either sense single variables or a more general formulation is to sense the entire formula. Okay. Now, in terms of the simple case, if you want to write a problem definition for a simple case, okay, so you have a precondition, P is a set of state variables, P, I, O, G, B is the formulation we're using. Okay, where P is the set of state variables, okay, I is an initial belief state, which is a formula over the P variables. And O is a set of operators, which are basically the actions with conditional effects and preconditions. And G is another complex formula over state variables. That's your goal variable, goal formula. And if you just have the first few, and the first four, then that would just be without sensing. Okay, and then I'm also saying B, which is basically a set of, you can either call them observational actions, or since each action is supposedly only looking at a specific variable, then you may as well just say which is the set of variables that can be sensed. For each variable that can be sensed, you know, there's a, you know, sort of an implicit observation action. So that's a simple way of thinking about, you know, observational, you know. So I is the initial belief state formula. P is basically just a set of propositions, or the set of state variables. You're thinking Boolean state variables. And, you know, G is the set of, G is the goal formula. O is the action definition, okay, which is of the following form. You know, A must require M to be true, requires M to be true, and if P is true, then we'll give you K. Ultimately, that's what an action does. They, you know, you have to use some syntax, like, you know, Dan's thesis gives a particular syntax, for example, for these actions. But ultimately, that's what they're talking about. They're telling you how they would change the state variables when you apply the action. Okay. Okay. Now, in this particular formulation, obviously, one nice thing about this is, B is really a subset of P, right? B is the set of variables that can be sensed are just a subset of total set of variables. Now, if B is equal to empty set, that would be conformant planning. That basically, that would be planning without sensing. Okay? If B equal to P, then that is fully observable situation, fully observable case. And then if B is truly a subset of P, I mean, it's a proper subset of P, then it's a partially observable case. Okay? Okay, that's all that was saying. Now, in essence, basically, another thing that you can think of in terms of the observational actions is that observational actions split a state into observational classes. Okay, and eventually, if you can partition a belief state into singleton states, then you have full observability. If you can only partition into states of size 5, then you have partial observability. Okay, so in terms of observational classes, if all I can do is to sense variable P1 and variable P2 and nothing else, then two states which are, you know, which are agreeing on those two values, but, you know, are equivalent as far as you're concerned. They may be very different otherwise, but they're equivalent as far as you're concerned. You, the planner, is concerned. Okay? So, in terms of observational classes, basically, the observational classes, there's a single observational class if you have no sensing. There are as many observational classes as there are states if you have full sensing. And little less than the number of states if you have partial sensing. No, all I'm saying is observation allows you to split your uncertainty, to resolve your uncertainty. So in your head, you think you are in one of these 15 states. Okay? My question is, can you make a series of observations so that you know exactly which state you are in? The world is fully observable if there is a sequence of observations that you can do so that you can tell exactly which state you are in. Okay, it's fully unobservable if nothing you do will ever resolve uncertainty, even a wee bit. Okay, so you thought originally you are in one of 15 states. Whatever you do, you still think I'm in one of these 15 states. And if it can at least be split to, I'm pretty sure that I'm not in these last 7 states. I'm only in one of the first 8 states. That's partial observability. Okay? Sensing resolves the uncertainty in your state. Right? That's basically what sensing actions are being used for. Okay. If you have these kind of observational classes, then you can write, so I already talked about progression and regression algorithms. And previously, so this is a progression algorithm over belief states. This is a progression algorithm over belief states such that if you just remove one piece, then it becomes the algorithm that we discussed previously. And if you add the piece for observational actions, then it's conditional planning algorithm. Okay? So all you're saying is that this particular procedure is being called recursively with a initial belief state, the goal formula, and the plan sequence, which is originally nil. So you don't have the plan yet. Okay, and then it basically, so the recursive procedure itself, it basically takes the plan P, G, and the initial belief state, and if G is satisfied by B, that means B entails G, then you're done at this point. So you can just go out. Okay, stop recursion. Otherwise, you need to do more planning. The question, of course, is you have to essentially do an action in the world. It's a non-deterministic choice as to which action to do. In essence, you have to ultimately do all actions and see which one will work out in your search space. Okay. However, that choice, that non-deterministic choice over all actions, can be split into two big branches. Big branch one, do sensing actions. Big branch two, do non-sensing actions. That means just causative actions. If you only keep doing causative actions, then you're doing conformant planning. If you do causative as well as sensing actions, then you're doing conditional planning. So the advantage of thinking in this way is actually in one search algorithm can generate you both conformant plans, that means plans which just do not happen to have any sensing actions anywhere, as well as those plans which have sensing actions in them. Okay. Now, it is actually possible that you can have plans which involve just pure sensing and nothing else. Okay. But it's much less likely. That means, like, you already are in the goal state. You're already in the goal state. You know, you just don't realize it. So you do enough amount of sensing, you realize, oh, I'm done, really. That would be a, you know, but for that to happen, you should be really lucky, you know. So you are just one of these people who already are wise. That means they're already in the goal state, but don't realize that they're wise, okay? And then you do a bunch of sensing actions, and you would be able to realize that, okay? So that would be the opposite of pure sensing plan is the opposite of pure non-sensing plan, except I think there are more reasonable examples of non-sensing plans than pure sensing plans. Okay, the bomb in the toilet is a non-sensing plan. Okay. By the way, this confinement is a nice name, but you can also say non-sensing plan. And if you keep saying it, after a while you start saying nonsense plan. And some people think that is an actually a reasonable word for defining, you know, describing confinement planning. You know, how can you think of plans which don't have any observations? So, you know, there was this one time when I was, you know, doing reviewing with somebody else from Canada. I didn't know that at that time. And the reviewer basically, we were reviewing the same paper, and my co-reviewer was saying, this nonsense planning paper has the following problems. And I assumed that this poor guy is maybe from India or Japan or China and didn't realize, you know, why that he, you know, he's, that this can be taken out of context. Turned out this guy was David Poole, who is from Canada and knew exactly what he was doing. And he wanted to tell people that confinement planning is nonsense planning. Right? So I mean, he's saying, no offense, it's just that's what it is. It doesn't do sensing. Okay? Anyway. By the way, David Poole is going to be the program chair for AAAI this coming year. He's one of the program chairs for AAAI. So he's a big enough guy. So if you have any confinement planning papers, send it to the next AAAI, not this one. I'm sorry. This is all made up. I mean, and this is true, but I mean, I don't think he will, you know, kill a paper just because of that. But so that's basically what I'm saying, okay, in this thing. So if you actually pick a causative action, you get a single belief state out. If you pick a conditional, if you get a sensing action, you get multiple belief states out. Multiple belief states out. Such that those are all essentially, so what is the interesting question? So let me, so you know this, right? If I am in S1, S2, S3, or S4, and I do a sensing action, I could, for example, get S1, S3 here, S2, S4 here. That's what a sensing action does, right? Right? Now, if I have B1, and I got it into B11, B12, these are logical formulas. What are the logical relations between those formulas? Obviously, just as this, so this is a subset of this. What that means is B1 entails this. It's the opposite way. I mean, you know, if you can do that. Okay? Because this is stronger than this. So this is stronger than this. This is a, you know, disjunction, extra disjunction. And this is equivalent to this. Okay, that's basically what you want, that you're doing, you know, when you're doing the sensing. And if I always pick the first non-deterministic branch, then I'll get which in itself has multiple choices, because even if after deciding that I'll pick non-sensing action, I have to decide which non-sensing action will I pick. And even after I pick sensing action branch, I still have to figure out which sensing action to pick. Right? Now, you know that if you pick the non-sensing branch, it's possible to do actions which won't get you closer to the goal state. In fact, if you remember from in terms of progression winds up doing actions because they can be done, not because they'll get it to the goal state. Anything that can be done, it'll do. Okay? By the way, remember that progression does actions because they can be done, right? If a pure progression without heuristics. So if you have a pure progression planner, which kind of actions would you prefer to have? This kind of actions or this kind of actions? Did you understand what I'm saying? So if I have a pure progression planner, doesn't have any good heuristics, okay? Would you rather pick actions, formulation, which have preconditions and conditional effects, or no preconditions, just purely conditional effects? Which would be better for you in terms of search, in terms of controlling the search?
Preconditions.
What?
Preconditions.
Preconditions. Which is one of the reasons why we still tend to use preconditions. Do you understand what I'm saying? Basically, that sort of puts an artificial cut and say you can't do this action in this state. Otherwise, you will try it. This is not the way to reduce your choice, of course. The right way to reduce your choice is to look at the heuristics and decide which action is the right thing to do. But if you don't have heuristics, you would start saying, oh, these kinds of actions are so much nicer. Right? And, you know, so this is PhD. This is grade school and undergraduate, right? In grade school and undergraduate, we will tell you, by 2 o'clock tomorrow, you must get this done. So I'll put huge number of preconditions. In PhD, you say, yeah, you're in, and you know, maybe before you kind of start having great-grandchildren, it would be good if you get done. That's it, you know? And it's up to you how long you take, and then you have to figure out. Everything is doable. You know, in undergraduate, it's clear that, you know, tomorrow at 2 o'clock, I have an exam. Is it okay for me to go to a matinee show? No. I have to be in the exam. I'm a PhD student. Can I go to a matinee show? Sure, no problem. Okay, you can do a matinee, then nightclub, then go to Greece, and, you know. So you have to figure out how to control your search. I'm not going to figure it out for you. Okay? Yes. Okay, good. Okay, so it's sort of, again, it's worth remembering why people try to have preconditions and actions, because that's what we do too in our real life. You know, it's nice for somebody to make these hard decisions for us, you know. Then we get to complain about them, but at least it sort of puts a structure on our life. Okay, but the right thing to do really is still, the original argument is still right. Which is, it would be better to think in terms of actions which have no preconditions, so that they're always applicable. Unless there is real physical reason, there is no reason to model actions with preconditions. Okay? And if your reason for doing it is to just artificially reduce branching factor, you should be focusing instead on good search control, heuristics. Don't use these as a, you know, crutch. That's the point. Okay. So here is an example which is doing, in this particular case, again for the same problem, where the actions are shown next to you, on that side. So A1, P gives R or not P. A2, if not P, then it gives R and P. And A3, if R is true, it gives G. And there is an action called O5. All it does is observes the value of P. And it tells you whether it's true or it's false. That's it. Okay. By the way, you actually think about this. So if this is a B1 formula, and I have an observational action which observes P, B11 is nothing but B1 and P. And B12 is nothing but B1 and not P. Right? That's what it is, really. So if an observation action is there, then if it's a complex observation action, P and not P, then it'll be P and not P. That's it. And they will, in fact, B1 and P does entail B1. B1 and not P does entail B1. And if you OR them, resolution will cancel P and not P, and you would get B1 back. B1 or B1, which is B1. Right, that's exactly what you expect. Okay, so in this case, I'm showing you again one branch which starts by, you know, starts from the initial state. Yes, you had a question.
Do we OR them or we AND them?
Which one?
B11 and B12.
No. So the You have to AND them. No, wait, wait just a second. Let me think.
You have to produce a DNF, right?
You have two logical formulas, and you have to OR them. You have to OR them.
You have to produce a DNF.
No, no, you don't need to think in terms of DNF. You know, this. So basically, this corresponds to some states, this corresponds to some states, and you have to union them. Unioning is OR. Okay? Okay, so it was partitioning, the observation action was partitioning, and you're just unioning them back. That's what it's done. Okay, so in this case, you know, it's a slightly different problem. It turns out it was not the previous problem. In this one, I'm starting from the empty initial state. What is empty initial state, by the way? Empty formula means it's every state of the world. Okay, so I could be anywhere in the world, okay, in my little world. And my little world is made up of, in this particular problem, my little world is made up of the state variables P, R, G. That's it. So there are really 8 states. So I'm in one of those 8 states. Okay? And then, so I'm doing O5 action up front. And in that case, I will get to a state where P is true, a belief state where P is true, and another belief state where not P is true. So I split the 8 states into 4 states and 4 states from the state point of view. Then on the top one, I do A1, I'll get R and not P. Then I do A3, I get G, R and not P, which gives you G. So that branch is done. Okay? Remember that if you go back to the search here, it will basically, whenever it does the observational action, it makes 2 calls to the planner. Okay, so you have to make sure that you work on both of the partition states. Okay, so in this case here you made this end. Okay, and then on the same thing, if you do it in the bottom one, A2 or first to A2 and then A3, that branch also ends. By the way, all this is saying is for this problem there exists a path which gets you the solution. But there are a huge number of other paths that would basically waste your time. Okay? And that's where the heuristics come. Okay, so you have to make sure that you pick the right path. That's just a different, that's the point of search. This one is just telling you that, you know, there exists a path, you know, that you can get. If your research is systematic, it would find it eventually. Right? Now, by the way, if at this problem, you should be able to do it yourself, that you can show to yourself that there is one more plan for this, which also exists in the same search space. And that essentially just does, you do A1 and A2 and A3, and you'll be done. Irrespective of which state you are in, if you do A1, A2, A3, you would be done. And since A1, A2, A3 are non-observational actions, what essentially that means is that you also, in this, for this problem, you have both an observational plan and a non-observational plan. In general, that's exactly what happens in normal scenarios. We talked about this, you know, as to which plan is a better one depends on the cost matrix you use. Observation actions can have costs. Okay? And then you have to talk about what is the cost of this conditional plan versus this conformance plan. I will give you the next one, I'll give you an example where without sensing there is no plan whatsoever. Because you do believe that, right? I mean, in fact, there are, what this example is really showing is that you can have, you shouldn't be, you could look at this and say, well, one plan, one solution has an observation action, other has no observation action. So it's like sensing or not sensing. Instead, what you really should think of is one solution has more sensing than the other solution. It's just the less sensing one has zero sensing, and the more sensing one has one sensing action. But the more important point is, you know, you can have actions that differ from each other, the solutions that differ from each other in the amount of sensing they do. On top of it, previously we already knew that we can have solutions that differ from each other in terms of number of non-sensing actions they can do. You know, they can be minimal plans and non-minimal plans. In progression search, you can wind up doing actions because they can be done, and you can get non-minimal plans such that a subsequence of that plan is also a plan. And you would like to, if you are into optimality, you would like to get the shortest plan, for example, as a plan which has the lowest cost. Now, if you start thinking in terms of sensing, you can also do over-sensing. You can also do over-sensing. So in this particular problem, why did I just do O5 and stop? I could have, maybe if I had all the possible sensing actions, then I could have, you know, done all the sensing to figure out where I am. But normally in most realistic world, sensing actions exist, but they will be costly. That's the reason, as I said, doctors give us broad spectrum antibiotics. Because they do have a way of figuring out exactly what you are suffering from, but it'll be costly. So it's easier to just give a non-sensing action. Okay? So just as you can do over execution, over more number of actions than are needed, you can also do over sensing. Well, I didn't quite.
So you limit your sensing,
mm-hmm.
You can automatically take more risks that you maybe won't, right?
Well, so in this particular case, notice that if I did find a plan, so that's actually an interesting question. However, it doesn't make that much of it. Actually, that doesn't play any part in this problem, because in this problem, both the plans are correct. They're just logically correct. You don't, you know, you could have done A1, A2, A3, and that would have gotten you to a solution, you know, that would have probably gotten you to goal state. Or you could have done it this way, that would also have probably gotten you to goal state. So the only way you can differentiate between them then is in terms of maybe if they have costs, if the actions have costs. Okay, but what's more interesting is if you start talking about stochastic planning, that means if you have actions with probabilistic effects, then a non-sensing plan, so in the current scenario, in the non-deterministic planning, you can only differentiate between two classes. A plan which is strong, that means every execution goes to the goal state, and everybody else. That means plans where some of the executions go to the goal state, some don't. But some is how big is that sum? You know, if there are 10,000 executions and one goes to the goal state, it's a weak plan. Okay? And you can't differentiate between whether, you know, 1 in 10,000 is better or 5 in 10,000 is better, because they're all non-deterministic. If you have stochastic plans, that means you have actions which not only, you know, you not only know the belief state, but you know the distribution of states. And you not only know the actions outcomes, but you also know probabilities associated with those outcomes. Then you can talk about a weak plan, but the degree of weakness or degree of strength. Okay? So I would say this plan will get you to the goal state with 90% certainty. Then you can talk about your risk issue. Okay? Well, you know, look, I mean, giving you antibiotics will more or less with 90% certainty cure you. Right? And, you know, if you have major issues with antibiotics, then you would say, no, I am rich enough, do tests on me, and first figure out what I am suffering from before you just give me this action. Okay? So then it makes sense to talk about risk. Okay? But in non-deterministic planning, since you only differentiate between strong and weak plans, and weak basically is everybody else. Strong are the only ones that you call plans. That means every execution will lead to the goal state. Then there is no difference other than, you know, cost of the actions. There is no risk involved. Okay? It's a good question, but again, this is more connected to the probabilistic version. And so again, for each of these, there is probabilistic conformant plans and probabilistic conditional plans. And in those cases, you talk about the probability of achievement of the goal as well as the cost. And it actually becomes a multi-objective optimization. You know, normally if you just care about cost, it's a single objective optimization. Okay? If you have both probability and cost, then it's a multi-objective optimization. You know, basically you have to decide how to combine those into either a single objective, or you start talking about actual domination Pareto sets. Yes. Yes.
But
how do you define the cost of the sensing action?
Well, do you assume that all the, in every state, you have the same sensing action?
No. All I'm saying is, so let me actually see if I can go to, I'll come back. Where am I? Okay. I'm going to go to a whole bunch of slides forward and come back. Okay. I have to go pretty much to the end. These slides are beautiful, but I have to do it on the bigger slide. okay, that one, actually. Unfortunately, you can't see much of it, but if you go back and look at that slide, it basically is saying that there is this question of how to describe the cost of the conditional plan. And let me just tell you what I'm trying to say. Let me just remind myself. Okay. So that particular plan, and let me write it down here. So essentially, it's a sort of a branching plan, and it says, and it's basically saying there is a sensing action which upfront takes $300 to do the sensing. Okay, and if the sensing says yes, then you do an action which is cost 7. If it says no, then you have to do an action whose cost is 12,000. Okay? And then that's one plan. So I have one plan which involves doing a sensing upfront, and if it says yes, you know, and the sensing action says yes, I'll do one action which is 7 units costly, and another action which, you know, otherwise I'll do the other action, which is 12,000 units costly. I also have a separate plan which doesn't involve any sensing at all, okay, which just does a whole bunch of actions together, one after other. It's guaranteed to be correct, okay, and it's 11,000 units costly. This is normally the only interesting question you would have in non-probabilistic scenarios. Both of them will work. The question is, which is better? Depends on how you define better, right? I mean, in particular, this guy is 11,000 because it's a sunk cost. All of them have to be executed. This one, we know for sure it's 300 is sunk cost. You know, when you get a test done, right, I mean, you think you might be having brain cancer and you put $5,000 and get an MRI done, and they say, oh, you don't have brain cancer. You can't ask them, give me my $5,000 back. Right? The test is done. And you should actually be happy that you don't have brain cancer. But anyway, so the test cost is always accrued. But only one of these will be accrued after the test. Okay? If you do not have probabilities associated with which is likely to happen, it's not at all obvious how to cost this plan. There's no obvious way. Right, you could basically be the very optimistic kind of a person, okay, and say, well, I think it will come this way. But then I will ask you, why are you wasting your time doing the test to begin with? If you're so optimistic, just assume that yes is the answer, and you can save the test, right? Or you could be pessimistic and say, you know, bad things will always happen to me. Again, there's no point in doing the test. Right? Because anyway, it's the no is the answer for you. As you could say, both of them are equally likely, which is a random assumption on the world. You know, you can make it. Right? That's what Dan Bryce's paper makes, by the way. Did you notice that when he applies the cost of, when he talks about the cost of conditional plans, he just says expected cost. You can't have expectation without probabilities. So if you don't have probabilities, you made some up, okay? And everybody just makes up half and half as the probabilities when they have to make up some, you know, uniform probability distribution. So then you will just say, so one way you would basically say is 300 plus 7 plus 12,000 by 2. So in that way, it still looks better than this. If on the other hand, you have the, you know, you can do the summative model, in which case it looks worse than this. You know, you see what I'm saying? So, and then on top of this, if you also have probabilities, that means probability of satisfaction of the goal. So the idea is, after you do this, if you do, there is an action you can do which will give you goal with 0.9 probability, another action which gives you goal with 0.99 probability. And you know which one will be costlier. Right? The way the world works, you know, if you want, you know, power with like 24/7, and then 24/7 basically is normally evaluated in terms of how many nines after 99 point. Okay? If you want just 99.9% probability of having power, you don't have to buy, you don't have to pay as much. If you want 99.99999, you have to pay a lot more. Okay? And then you have to talk about what is it worth having this extra cost, extra probability of satisfaction of the goal, which we didn't talk about in the original example. In the original example, both of these will reach the goal with 1.0 probability. Okay? Yes, sir. What?
Kind of like how I take health insurance.
What do you do?
So, you have to pay premium like health insurance, and then on top of that, there's the deductible, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you have an upfront cost, you know, for so much, you're going to pay 6 months in deductible. Then you have to figure out, okay, each agreement cost depending on your deductible, too.
Yeah.
So, you have a higher deductible, the lower the premium, so then you got to try to see what the maximum I can actually pay.
Also, I mean, how important is it for you to have actually the leg really straight? You know, after the accident, if it is, you know, my currently, this I can do this, I can only do this much. So how important is it to have both of them go up? You know, that's also important, you know. If one shoulder just goes up to that, you can have a lower premium. This actually brings us, ultimately the point I'm trying to make is we do this, and it's part of, it's a complex combination of your preferences and the way the probability, the costs are combined over probabilities. Now, these are independent, actually. So, I don't want to go off too much on a tangent on this, but it's all I talked about in this, if you remember this today, here, there is no question of preferences. You basically said both of these are reaching the goals anyway. Both of these are reaching the exact same goals. And so, all you cared about is the cost of the plan. And some people actually, you know, I mean, but more generally, you could actually have different preferences for people. And you have costs associated with them. And then they are normally in the different currencies. They're not all in the dollar cost. Which is why when somebody actually did a, you know, test, I think there's a very interesting study once where this is, how many of you, I don't know how many of you know this. So a school system somewhere in US essentially tried to basically figure out whether or not it's worth removing all the asbestos in the schools. You know, like, you know, our poor Coronado, you know, Corona del Sol has recently had this asbestos problem. The question is it really worth removing the asbestos? Or should we let people die and then they'll just sue us? And then, you know, we figure out what to do. Now, how do you make a decision on this? So they, you know, got a commission, and the commission guys essentially came up with, you know, they need some numbers. So they came up with the number saying, the value of life for people in that neighborhood, you know, for kids in the neighborhood is about $250,000. And based on that, they made calculations, and they said, okay, based on that, you should actually do at least 30% of the schools with asbestos should be cleaned up. Otherwise, you would be losing money. When the results of the study became public, there was a huge, you know, hue and cry, and people said, how can you say that my kid is only $250,000? How can you put a value to their lives? So they said, okay, we won't put a value to their lives. So they removed the value to their lives. They had another commission. Nothing happened. So what happened essentially is by not putting a value to the life, you actually made it zero. You know, invaluable means has no value. Right? So, the reality, this is the reality, that school system, instead of actually cleaning up 30% of the schools, wound up not doing anything. And it's a tricky issue, which is the, you know, right thing to do. You know, I mean, in this particular case, the community was ill-served by stopping the commission from attaching a value to the life. Because irrespective of what they think their kids, you know, life's value is, they got screwed, you know, with the second version compared to the first version. Anyway, and then one other interesting point about these fencing actions, which you can actually talk about if you have probabilities, is the value of information. Should you or should you not sense depends on what is the likelihood of the answer being yes versus no, and what is the utility of those states. Okay, why do a test which most of the time says yes anyway? It looks like there's no point in doing it. But that assumes that yes and no have approximately the equal utility. But what if the no version has minus infinity as the utility? And yes version, you know, this is the brain cancer test, right? You started having various hallucinations and you're wondering, should I do the brain cancer test? Most of my friends found they have no brain cancer when they tested it, and they look like fools because they lost $5,000. Should I go test it, right? Most of the time it says, no, you don't have brain cancer. But once in a while it'll say yes, and the yes would be minus infinity. I don't know, I mean, or minus 250,000, depending on what you consider your value of life is, right? And the no would be, you know, basically zero, let's say, and then of course the $5,000 sunk cost. You need to know, to decide whether or not the test has value, you need to know the probabilities of both of these, and then you can actually make a decision theoretic formula. We'll talk about this, and I'm sure you can actually figure it out too, as to whether or not it's worth doing the test. In, you know, like cold cash terms, does it make sense? If I give you all the numbers of utilities and probabilities, you can tell me whether or not it's worth doing, because you talk about expected cost before and expected cost after, and then compare them. Okay, once again, you need probabilities for that. In non-deterministic case, you can't do that. And it almost looks like this whole thing is becoming like an advertisement for probabilistic planning. But, but you know, you need to understand the issues even before probabilities come in, and then more things are added on top of that. I'll go another 5 more minutes, and then I'll stop at a reasonable point so that next time when I come, I'll do the heuristics, which is this, you know, nice labeled diagrams. And then we'll also, depending on time, we'll start talking about mass causation probabilities. So this is where we were, I think, right? Yeah. Well, I came fast. So the thing that I want to do in this now is that this is the second one is this example, which in the first one, in the previous one, there was really no reason to do sensing because there is always a non-sensing version of a plan. Okay. That in essence means what? If for every problem that you could ever think of, there is a non-sensing version of the problem. What does that mean? It means it's a fully observable world as far as you are concerned. Okay, your goals and your requirements are making it effectively fully observable for you because you don't necessarily need to know exactly what state you are in.
It's not actually observable.
What?
Sensing, so it's not actually observable.
No, I said non-sensing. If I'm able to solve every problem without sensing.
Then you don't need observability rather than not observable, right?
What? I understand.
If you can achieve all your goals without sensing,
mm-hmm.
then you don't even need observability, right?
Yeah, that's one way of saying it. Or you can also say effectively it's a fully observable world for you. No. There's nothing else, you know. I mean, so in this particular case, it turned out that there is both a conformance plan and a sensing plan. But really what I want you to think about is there is less sensing versus more sensing plan. And in the next case is the kind of case you should remember, just as you remember bomb in the toilet as a canonical example for being able to solve a problem without sensing. Even though it looks like you need sensing, but you don't need to. If you do both, then you'll be done, okay? Here is a situation where you essentially, you need, I mean, the reason this is the reason why medical profession once in a while actually does test. Okay, so in this particular example, this is called, you know, this comes up in every conditional planning paper you read. This is the Medicaid example. It's a very simple example. All you are saying is the patient, when they came, is not dead, okay, and they may be ill, okay, and the question is, you want to make sure that they are not ill in the end. You also want to make sure that they are not dead at the end. These are, you know, tricky issues, okay, and now the point, of course, is that there, and so it turns out that to make sure that they are not ill, you could give them a medicine, which, if they are ill, makes them not ill. If they are not ill, makes them dead. And you know that, right? I mean, even though, I mean, this is a complex version of the reality that we live through, okay? Chemotherapy increases the survival rate of cancer patients. So should I just go and have some amount of chemotherapy? It's not like, you know, coffee. Coffee itself is bad, but chemotherapy is much worse, right? So in essence, if I'm not having cancer and I have chemotherapy, my survival rate reduces. Okay, and it's a very, very costly way of having a bald head, essentially, right? And so you basically, you can say that there are certain medicines which, if you are not actually having that disease, will kill you, or at least get you closer to the, you know, death. Okay. Yes, this is this. What do
you
mean 4-7?
You add the same example.
Possibly, I don't know. Okay. So this is a canonical example where you need sensing. In this particular case, if you give them the medicine without sensing, then they could die if they are not actually ill. And thankfully, there is a test which tells you whether or not they're ill. The test basically will do a staining. And the staining will come up with a blue tongue versus a non-blue tongue. And if you have a blue tongue, then you have, you know, illness. If not, you don't have illness. Okay? So then, in that particular case, clearly you know what to do. You are supposed to first do the test, and based on the results of the test, you treat them. And that's basically the problem. And here is actually a solution for this. So you start from a progression solution. And one more example of progression in this case. You start from not D and I and not B, and R, not D and not I and not B. That means not dead, ill, and not blue. Okay? R, not dead, not ill, and not blue. And then you do stain. And the stain action basically will make the not blue into a blue if you are ill. If not, it just leaves it alone. Okay? It is important to have both of them not be up front, because if you also can't ask the, you know, if the doctor doesn't have good eyeglasses, and if the patient already might have eaten blue ice cream, and then they did the stain, and the stain didn't do anything, and then you ask the nurse to look at the tongue, and they say, oh, they have blue tongue, then you got the wrong conclusion. Basically, you thought the staining is what got them into blue. It's just ice cream which made it. Okay. So this is why we made sure that initially there is both are not blue, and then after the staining, the one where the initial, you know, illness is true, the blue would be true, and the one which has illness not true, blue won't be true. But this is a single belief state at this point. After staining is not an observation action. Staining is the setup for observation. After staining, you have to open your eyes and ask them to stick their tongue out and look at the tongue. Okay? Then, if you do observe, which is sense the tongue color, then it will split it into two formulas. One with B and one with not B. Right? Okay? And that's basically what exactly happened there. So the B formula comes one side and not B formula comes the other side. By the way, you could convince yourself that you could have taken, this is actually a logical formula, right? This whole thing or this whole thing. And if you take this logical formula and add and B, then you'll get this. And add and not B, you'll get the other one. Okay? Basically, you pick the disjunction correctly. And then after that, you work on both of them. you know, the one on this side, it's already at the goal state because it's not ill and not dead. And the other one, you do medicate, it will become not ill and not dead. Okay? And the last thing I want to show you is what happens if you do regression when you have conditional planning. What happens you have, what happens essentially is the tricky part is, so this is the progression version of this problem where you went forward doing the observation action and you split it into multiple belief states, partition belief states, and worked on both of them to get you to the goal state, right? If you start from the back, then the interesting thing that happens is you start from not D and not I, and you notice that what you wind up having to do is you have to split that goal by conditioning it on B and not D. That's what you need to do. Okay? You have to condition it on B and not B, and basically that the problem, of course, is, and if you do that, if you condition on B and not B, then this one you can regress it over Medicaid. The other one, without doing anything, you would then get these two states, which essentially can be combined by the observation action. That's what happens in eventually in the regression. Okay. The tricky problem is, how do you know what sensing to condition on? Suppose you want to be happy, right? You can split that goal happy into happy and rich and happy and not rich. Or you can also split it into happy and have blue pen and happy and not have blue pen. Or you can also split it into happy and any random thing and negation of that. Which one are you supposed to split? Now, you might say, this is no worse than what you had in progression. What are you supposed to sense when you're going in the forward direction? Everything is, you know, you feel like sensing because it can be done. Okay, the difference is, normally, if you remember regression, one of the big selling points of regression is that it's goal-directed. Somehow, you wind up doing actions that are at least relevant to where you need to go, even if they don't get you all the way to the initial state. But that thing seems to have gone out the window now. Okay, so that kind of cuts down the one selling point of regression, and it sort of tells you at least intuitively why there's not that much work on regression-based sensing planners. There are some, but you know, this is one real issue you have to keep in mind. And you have to realize that this is it's a problem also for progression. It's just that we always knew that's a problem for progression. But now even regression has this problem. Okay? So I will stop here. In essence, what I did is I talked about the action representation, state representation, and search for, you know, belief space planners in confinement case, both progression and regression. In conditional case, both progression and part of regression, essentially what would be a problem if you try to do a regression. I didn't completely explain how to do regression right. Okay, I'll stop here. Next time we will essentially go through the heuristics, planning graph-based heuristics for pushing, you know, for guiding the search in these cases.
There's no class next week, right?
No, there is class next week. It's the week after that I won't be here.
Okay, great.
Yeah, next week both classes I'll be here.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.